Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunningly gorgeous Amanda Flanders.
Hello. You were supposed to say stonkingly there, weren't you?
No.
I thought you were going to say stonkingly.
No, no.
You can't say stonkingly.
Wrong woman.
Exactly.
Wrong woman.
Jules is stonking. I'm stunning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Jules.
It could have been worse. It could have been stinky and stonky, couldn't it?
That is true.
So, you know.
That's just off air, you call us that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sending our thoughts to Jules at the moment. She's at the hospital with her mum. So get well soon, Ruth. Hope it's okay. And hope you get by all right. I'm sure you will. But we're missing you. But it's lovely to be joined by Amanda.
It's good to be back in the studio.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has.
Yeah. I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors. The Business Bunker Radio Show is pleased to partner with KO Digital. They're Kent's leading technical agency. They help ambitious companies that want to grow, succeed through the best use of digital technology. You can find out more about them by going to their website, which is www.ko, that's KAYO.digital, KO.digital. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show this week. We really do appreciate it. So,
there's a tweets coming in.
We've got loads of tweets, and we do want to hear from you, all the businesses out there in the southeast of England and further afield. We've got listeners now all over the country, all over the continent, and in Spalding.
Spalding?
Yeah, Lincolnshire.
Who's in Spalding?
Chris.
Oh, Chris Hyde. Chris moves around so much.
He does. Well, I was listening to Chris while you were watching the telly last night. I was in the kitchen. He did a disco hour, so I had my platforms on and everything, and we were doing disco.
Is that what you were doing out there?
Yeah. It were good. It were a good disco evening.
Was it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. And Chris has sent me an interesting email. I'll tell you what, I'll read it now.
Yeah, and then
we'll have a chat. Chris sent me this, Chris Hyde from Sound of Spitfire Radio. And a chap sent it to him, and he said, here's a lockdown story sent to me by Chris of Sound of Spitfire Radio. It's about a young lady called Holly, and she graduated from university last year and immediately secured her first design agency job with IF, which is a company based in Altrincham in Cheshire. Yeah, because of the economic effects of COVID-19, the agency had to make job cuts, and sadly, Holly lost her job, even though she really loved it. But instead of buckling, however, she started a business, producing low-cost personal portraits of animals, which trades under the name of Port and Prince.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah. The new business is proving to be a great success, and she's working flat out to meet the demands from her growing client list. Now, if that's not an example of what young people can achieve today through skill and determination, then I don't know what is. And you can support Holly's new business and see the work that she's doing and examples of her artwork. And you can maybe even place an order. And the best way to do that is to go to her Facebook page, which is Poor and Prince UK. That's Poor and Prince UK, or her Instagram, which is Poor and Prince, to see more of her work and to order something if you like the look of what you see. So please support this young entrepreneur. She really deserves it. And what a lovely story. It's nice to have uplifting stories as well as all the horrible things that are going on right at the moment.
Yeah, it's nice actually that somebody so young has adapted started something else. So
yeah.
Well done to her, definitely.
And talking about people that have adapted, Amanda.
Yes.
You've been a bit of a pivoter, haven't you?
It's not a pivot. There's a new word, though. Pivot! Yeah. I haven't pivoted.
I hate the word pivot, which is why I use it all the time, because it annoys everybody.
Well, whenever you say the word pivot, all I have coming to mind is Friends.
Right.
Now, Karen, you must have seen this episode of Friends. Okay, there's no Friends people around there? Okay, so Ross and everybody's trying to get this sofa up the stairs and they can't
I have seen that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they can't get up the stairs, so... And he's going, pivot. So every time somebody says pivot, it just reminds me of that.
Right, so you've been playing with a sofa.
Yes, I've been moving the sofas around.
No, but I want to talk to you about this because it is important and what you've done is brilliant. And we, you know, in line with the young lady that's starting her own business, you've actually done something very courageous, really.
Or stupid.
Yeah, kind of interchangeable, those two. I was being nice because we're on air.
Yeah, no.
You've done what, you silly mare?
Literally.
Why don't you tell the story of what you were doing, why you can't do that at the moment, and what you've decided to do.
Yeah, well, for those listeners that don't know me, I am still currently at the moment the CEO of Evexio Limited, which is an event live events company. So, of course, as soon as I say a live events company, everybody knows exactly what I'm going to say, that obviously I haven't been able to run any events this year. My first one was due to be in March, the week before lockdown, and literally the day before we pulled it, because up until that point, everyone's going, oh, you know, we'll just carry on and we'll just, you know, it'll be careful and it'll be fine. And then when we got to that point, it was like, we're not quite sure if it is going to be fine. But then we went into lockdown. It's like, okay, we'll move it to the summer, be fine by the summer. And then, okay, we'll move it to the end of the year. And it's not going to happen. I don't think there'll be any live events this year. They're supposed to have been reviewing it on the 1st of October, but we know that's not going to happen now because he's putting curfews and all sorts all over the place. So events aren't going to happen. And I know a lot of events companies have pivoted to virtual, and that's where the world has gone at the moment. It's just not what I started the business about, and I know you can do it virtual, but you just don't get the same effect. Online events just aren't the same as face-to-face events, and I didn't have the same passion and drive. So obviously realising I couldn't do that anymore, I thought, well, what else can I do now? As it so happened, I have a hobby, which is a passion, which is horses. I've been around horses most of my life, apart from a break when I moved abroad. And I had got my own horse a year ago. My daughter rides, and my horse turned out to be a bit of a project. I took on as a project.
It's a nutter. Come on, let's see.
She's a very sensitive mare. Is Tara, and it did end up being a big project than I expected. And from working with her, it's actually taught me and encouraged me. When I worked with horses before, I've done training, etc., and I've taken on different methods of training. Natural horsemanship is very much the avenue I go down, working with the likes of Monty Roberts, who is a well-known natural horsemanship advocate, and there's lots of different ones out there now. So when I say natural, I'm not talking, oh, bless you, Tara, you just kicked me, that's fine. We don't, not quite that soft.
Are you not?
No.
Are you not really?
No. But
she didn't mean it.
It wasn't her fault.
It actually wasn't her fault. I was in the wrong place. Very much, if someone gets injured by a horse, it's because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. It is true. So obviously when the business ground to a halt because I couldn't do anything, and because I'd done so much work with Tara, I decided to start helping other people's horses and training. You know, horses are very much misunderstood, and they are expected to just behave the way they're expected to behave. At the end of the day, they're in the human world, the environment, you know, and if they're spooking or being silly, then they shouldn't be silly. Well, but people seem to forget that horses have only actually been domesticated for just over 100 years.
It's not that long, is it?
Which is not a long time. No. And obviously, prior to that, they were hunted. For food, and prior to that they were completely wild, and people started bringing them in, realizing they could use them for work, and they helped people in lots of different work situations. Obviously they still do, and then after that they began to realize that they could be used for pleasure, riding pleasure, and obviously then all the different sports came out. Horse racing was probably one of the first ones, and then jumping, etc. And so horses have been bred, and then obviously more bred now into domestication. They still have their natural instincts, and their natural instincts is flight. If something scares them, they want to get away from it. If the last resort for them is to fight. Obviously, when it was first originally thought that you could work with horses, and you know, the thing to do was to break them through fear, you know, beat them until they submit. Type of thing.
It's pretty brutal,
which is pretty brutal, and it is. Don't look at me.
I'm not saying anything.
This is a non-animal person altogether, let alone a non-horse person. But no, it is, and that is very much the way that horses, you know, people will talk about horses, you know, you show them who's boss and that type of thing. But it has obviously been established that if you teach them by fear, there's always going to be something else they're more frightened of than you.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
That instinct is right.
Exactly. If Paul's around, they'd be more worried. So there's lots of different natural methods now where you're building a collaboration with the horse, working with the horse, and getting it to do what you're asking it because it wants to. You know, horses are pretty much like dogs. They're very loyal. If you teach them, if you look after them well, you teach them, they can do amazing things.
You have to understand them, don't you, for them to understand you, I think.
Yeah,
probably.
If you read their body language, read, you know...
They're more sensitive than we give them credit for.
Very much
dogs
so.
Dogs and horses aren't,
they
I
have,
think.
They have emotions, they have sensitivities, and... Yeah, so I've just sort of working with that, and as you know, spend all my, well, to be fair, the real reason is I spend pretty much all my time with the horses. And Paul said to me, if you're going to spend so much time with those blimmin' horses, please earn some money out of it.
Make it profitable.
I did say
he did say that several times.
And she did take it on board, and now she's gone mad.
You may as well do something that you love, mightn't you, if you're going to spend that much time there.
So tell the listener what you've done now.
Well, it's officially launched yet. I'm launching it this week. So I've been training, obviously, taking on people's horses, going to their premises to work with them. And I've decided now that I'm actually obviously going to have to do this full-time, to take on my own premises.
Wonderful.
So from the beginning of next week, I'll be moving into my own stables.
Oh, how exciting.
And taking in training horses and liveries.
I bet your daughter's excited, isn't
very
she?
Very excited.
I'm excited too, because there's a big sand school there. and I've worked out I can get 3 beach volleyball courts on it.
Can
yeah,
you?
Yeah. We showed them around the shop. We've got a huge indoor school.
I've never seen a horse play volleyball before.
Yes. That's all Paul could see. He's like, well, we can turn that into a volleyball court.
Yeah.
But I think because of running a business before, I mean, a lot of people do want to turn their passions into a business, and that's often the worst thing to do because you don't know how to run a business, and that's where it fails. Yeah. And that's the difficult thing. When you do something that you're passionate about, it's great, but it's everything else that comes
with
running a business.
You've got to lead with your head as
well
as your heart.
Oh, yeah, you've got to have the logic side of it. So Paul's my logic side of it.
Excellent.
Like, how is this going to work? How are you going to earn money out of it? Because at the end of the day, yes, it's great if you can do something you love, but if you can't earn money out of it, there's no point doing it.
And to be honest, this kind of business, a livery business and stable management business, is actually incredibly complicated to run.
Yes.
But if you try and make sense of the VAT rules, for instance, it's just mad.
Oh, really?
It's just completely bonkers. Mm. So if anybody knows an equestrian specialist accountant out there,
we really need to talk to you because
it is really I know my way around VAT. I've run businesses for 30 years. But when I started looking at it for this, I just went, that's bonkers.
Why is it so complicated?
Well, because it depends on what you do with a horse. Whether if you brush its tail, you have to charge VAT. If you throw a bucket of water over it, you don't.
I'm
paraphrasing.
Exaggeration slightly. It's if you provide in a place for the horse to live, i.e. a stable or a field, you don't charge VAT on that because it's required for the horse's health. But if you muck out that horse for the owner, then you have to charge VAT on that. If you're brushing the horse, if you're doing... Yeah, so any
you
services...
You would argue both of those things up for the horse's health. That's a bit of a fine line.
You need somebody, as Paul said, you do need a very experienced equestrian accountant who knows how it works because it's, you know, and that's something that, again, if you're running a proper business, you need to have those things in place to understand what's happening with it. I found a really good equestrian insurance company at Brookhurst. I can't remember the Brookhurst...
Yeah.
Solutions,
yeah.
Who actually specialise in the equestrian industry.
Joe and Paul Upton,
isn't Yes.
Yeah.
No, Laura. Laura Upton. You said Joe
Laura,
before.
Sorry. Yeah, did I say Joe?
Yeah.
Laura and Paul Upton, yeah.
I'm getting quotes from anything. So, yeah, so it's exciting. It's terror exciting. But it should be good. And quite actually, interestingly, something, you know, having my own stables was something that I was looking to do further on down the line. The opportunity has come up, so... be gone for it. You know, they do say if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. So,
and sometimes you need an unexpected push. You can become a little bit stuck in your comfort bubble, can't you? And if you come to, well, this whole corona thing's been more of a shove than a push, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So lots of people have had to think outside the box, but in some ways that's quite positive because it's maybe pushed you in a direction you might not have gone.
Well, exactly. It's something you're sort of pondering, isn't it? And so, do I keep horses as my passion? Do I make it a business? And say I have just been completely...
Haven't really had a choice, so you've had to make it
kicked
work.
And made and jumped into it, which, you know...
And I think now that people are being encouraged to be outdoors a bit more and kind of lots of people have changed the way they live their life and being out in nature, I mean, that's probably a perfect time to start something that is... pretty much. You don't normally ride a horse indoors, do you?
Not completely not indoors, no.
There's the covered... stairs are a bit of a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Covered sand schools were a problem, but no, you know, it's good.
Well, we wish you much luck with it. It is going to be a rip-roaring success.
I know it is.
So do I.
It will be. You have no choice.
You've got to look after me. Yeah. I'm retiring.
Somebody has to make, yeah.
I've had a tweet from Richard Bell.
Hi, Richard.
And he says, I'm listening to the show. I'm not after a shout-out, but it's good to hear Amanda Flanders back on the Business Bunker waves again, Vanilla Webb. Love to you both and all the Business Bunker listeners. Stay safe, stay secure, all of you. And that's from the lovely Richard Bell.
Richard Bell.
Whose Twitter handle is Security Speak.
Security Speak, yes. Richard is lovely. Richard used to co-host when I did the Business Bunker Extra, and he's our security expert. He used to come on every month and scare us. So I'll be talking to you, Richard, about the security I need to have around the horses.
You might need to have a little bit.
Yes. I do also want to give a quick shout out to the wonderful Hacks from Hacks. Hacks, what's your hazmat? I can't remember your name, Hacks.
Prism Media.
Prisma Broadcast his business, and also Hacks Filmmaker. So Hacks is a filmmaker, does video, and he has done something I think is brilliant, not just because it includes me as well, but because in general it's a brilliant idea. He's started a vlog,
right?
And basically his man on a bike doing a vlog.
Marvellous.
Yeah, and he's driving around the county for now. I'm sure he'll go further afield. Might go up to Scotland. Hey, Hacks. And he's meeting with business owners who have obviously come, as we're coming out or as we're in the middle of still the pandemic, wherever we are, but to business owners that have had to pivot. Right. Or have had to adjust, or what's happening.
They pivoted.
Pivot.
They've been moving their sofas.
They've been moving their sofas.
Makes me think of a ballet dancer, quite frankly.
Yeah. And it's great. He's done this fantastic, through the eyes of vlog, to talk to these business owners. And he did an interview with me a couple of months ago, and that is now available on Hacks. His Facebook is going to be online later today when he gives me my copy, and I can't remember Hacks's Facebook page. Hacks Filmmaker. Hacks, I'll give it to you in a minute when I can find it. But he spoke to me about how I've changed the business, and he's also going to be talking to other businesses and how how they're doing and what they've been doing. So if there's any business out there who have got a really interesting story, Hacks is always really happy to hear from people. He'll come along, he'll film you, and it'll go on the vlog. So if you find him, Hacks Filmmaker, at Hacks Filmmaker on Twitter, and Hacks...
How are you spelling Hacks?
H-A-X. Good point. I always presume people know Hacks. So his actual name is Mike Hacker, but we all just call him Hacks.
Oh, cool.
He's known as Hacks. So it's Hacks Filmmaker on Facebook. And the first vlog is up there. Just checking. Yes, my vlog is up there today. On his Facebook page. And I say it's going to be online and everything. But, yeah, I think, he's doing it to help businesses get,
there'll be some great stories out
exactly.
there for sure.
And just, everyone loves the stories and everything like that. So do
and
give
something quite positive, like you said earlier, Paul. It's been a bit of a negative time, to say the least. So
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I've got another positive story here. Somebody else has launched a new business. It's Ray Cook, and he's been in the building game for over 30 years, working within the high-end residential market in London, building properties and carrying out day-to-day maintenance. He's been involved with the commercial sector, offering a 24-hour reactive maintenance package to one of the top four supermarkets. Market chains in the country. The pandemic has urged him to bring his expertise closer to home, where he's now offering his services to Kent and the surrounding areas. RJC Elite Property Maintenance is offering a full building service as well as day-to-day maintenance and emergency repairs. We're proud members of Checker Trade, he says, and if you want to find out more, you can visit their Facebook page, which is RJC-Elite-Property-Maintenance. That's RJC Elite Property Maintenance, separated by hyphens. You can call him on 07984 341 662. 07984 341 662. That's RJC Elite Property Maintenance. Check them out. And they're on Checker Trade. So check them out, have a look. And that's Ray Cook. So all power to you, Ray. Well done, mate. And wishing you much success.
Does anybody else get that the tune in the head when you hear Checker Trade?
Yeah.
I literally just got
Checker Trade.
Almost listened to song, yeah.
We've had a tweet from Colin Bat Removals.
Right.
Have a great show today. Stay safe, everyone. At Bat Removals. Do they remove bats?
No. Bats pianos. Pianos, they do. But they're a removals company and storage company. Yep. They do storage.
Where does the bat come from? Is that his surname?
That's his name.
Okay, well, I'm just
T.
checking.
It's double T. It's going to be easier checking. To remove bats than pianos.
Yeah, double T, yeah.
Just to be sure, I love to know where people's business names come from.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they're really interesting.
Yep.
And other times they're not.
Well, they are a very interesting company, and I'll tell you the story about them. Bat Removals is a family firm, Colin Bat Removals. It's now run by Simon Bat, who is actually a pilot in the Air Force.
Wow.
And he was recently flying one of the first F-35 fighters.
Good grief. He's a busy man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if you want your piano moved quickly, there you go.
I play.
Yeah, yeah. Tracy Ann Barker's been on. I'm with a client this afternoon, so I'm going to be listening on catch-up. Have a terrific show. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you. What we're going to do now, we're going to play some cheesy tunage. Yeah, and it's a piece of music that I pick that has almost no relationship to the first guest.
Oh, he was cheesy.
Apart from some furtive imagination I have in my own mind.
Now I'm nervous.
So I've picked this for Karen Stanley, who we're going to be talking to after we've played this. And Karen's an author. So what am I going to play? Limahl.
What?
Limahl. Never-ending story.
Brilliant.
Bunker with Paul Andrews.
bit of Le Mal there.
That wasn't too bad. As far as your cheesy tunage goes, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, so I'm okay. I got away with that one, didn't I?
Cheddar, as opposed to a gorgonzola, maybe.
Yeah, I like what you did.
Yeah,
how you did that. I normally get, because she's not here, but she's normally listening somewhere out there, I normally get a WhatsApp message after the tune going, what the hell was that?
Oh, right, that
was horrible. Yeah. But so I got away with that one, I think. But I did have to think very hard, knowing that she'd be here, that I couldn't do anything that was too off-putting. I've had a tweet from the lovely folks from Paul and Polly at Diamond Circle Weddings, and they say, Vanilla Web, 30th of September, the events industry are coming together again to light it up in red. But this time it's not just the UK or Europe, it's the whole world. And we would like to light an iconic building in Kent to show the world what has to offer. Any suggestions?
It could be Leeds Castle.
Well, I said my first reaction was Leeds Castle or Dover Castle or the White Cliffs or Canterbury Cathedral.
White Cliffs would be pretty cool, wouldn't
it? Yeah.
But we've got to think, obviously, they've got to put the lights on, so that'd be quite a something that's doable.
Yeah.
Physically doable.
Well, you could,
if you want to be more local, even Rochester Cathedral.
Yeah, but you could go to Calais and shine the light over, couldn't
you? Because last time they did the Grand Folkestone Hotel.
Yeah, they did, yeah. That could be cool. So let's see. At the moment, Paul and Polly are on their holidays. They're doing the North Coast 500 around Scotland. Yeah. You know, Jules seems to have started a trend with that.
Yeah, it's all Jules' fault. I think we need to go to Scotland.
And what else have we got?
I've got some tweets coming through.
Have you? Go for it.
We've got Chris Hyde has finally joined us.
Mm-hmm.
So he's late to the parade. Hi, everybody. Sorry you were late. We'll let you off this time, Chris. And also I've had a tweet from Alpha 311. So that if people don't know that, Alpha 311 is Barry.
It's Barry and John, isn't
Barry it? And John.
Yeah.
They'll always forever be Barry and John. They're 311. You need to have them on soon to discuss their amazing projects, and they've got something else exciting happening soon which they're going to launch, but they've developed wind turbines that create enough energy more locally, isn't it, more localized.
The idea behind it's a really clever idea, and what it is, it fits in lampposts down roads.
Oh wow.
And a lot of the wind is generated by the traffic going past.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And it generates enough each one generates enough electricity to light the lamp. And
That's a really clever idea. Cool. Yeah.
They'll probably kill me because I haven't explained it properly, but
I'll give you the official description. The only wind turbine that doesn't need the wind to be blowing.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
If you want to find out more, if you're interested, if you go to @311alpha to find out more, but
it's awesome.
Pretty cool what these guys have been up to. These people with inventive minds.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really clever, and they've done it, you know, they brought it to market very quickly. We've had a tweet from the lovely Bev and Tony, Chips and Dinks, who are listening in, and thank you for all your support, guys. Apparently Tony made the tea this morning.
Blimey,
that's
Tony.
That's a turnout for the books.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about Bev and Tony this morning because they're just so lovely.
Mm.
And Bev posted on Instagram the other day the lunch. She made a goat cheese frittata for Tony for his lunchbox. I'm thinking, they're just so lovely. Mm. Such a lovely couple. I want to find out what they argue about. They must have arguments about something.
Yeah. I've never had a goat cheese frittata.
No,
you don't like goat cheese?
That's true. That is true.
And I don't know how to make frittata, so that's another reason.
Oh, I do.
Two problems right there.
I've had a tweet which nicely leads me into what we're going to do next, actually, and it's from the lovely Angus at Food and Drink Tours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he said, it's Business Bunker radio show today, and one of the guests is the lovely Karen Stanley. If you're a budding writer or novelist, then do please listen to her interview with Paul and Amanda. It will be fabulous.
Oh, so, Angus is a sweetheart. He's very... Oh, he's very good at sharing people and
saying
positive things.
Yeah,
he's absolutely amazing like that.
Yeah. So, well, that's a nice introduction for you, Karen.
It's an absolute
pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show for the very first time, Karen Stanley. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about you and what it is you do? I mean, obviously, Angus has told us you're an author. I've also, so many people tell me you're funny.
Oh, Lord, no pressure then.
No pressure, but we need some jokes,
I feel on
apparently.
The spot now. Oh, gosh.
No.
I'll have to think of some clean ones.
Yeah. But why don't you start off by telling us a bit about what you're doing? And I know that for many years you were a teacher.
I was, for my sins. My name's Karen Stanley. As Paul quite rightly says, I was a teacher for about 20 years, I think.
And did you specialise in a subject?
I was primary school.
Oh, right.
And then I was assistant head teacher for quite a few years.
At a primary level?
Yeah, yeah. At primary. And absolutely loved it. I sort of came to the teaching party quite late. I sort of was a, what they call a mature student, don't
right,
I?
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did that for a long time, and I did other stuff. I sort of did tuition for children in vulnerable groups, children in the care system, and
yeah,
who
yeah,
maybe didn't fit into the educational mould always for whatever reason. Always had a passion for literacy, writing, books, reading, which is not that unusual for a teacher, I would imagine.
Sure.
Loved story time. And I decided to follow my dream to become a writer.
Right.
And that's how I've got to where I am. A bit of a convoluted path, I would say.
Yeah, but I
maybe.
Mean, we always follow strange paths through lives, I find, you know, because it's the people that try to go straight to something that don't always get there because they become overly obsessed with one thing. Whereas if you meander your way through life and take opportunities as they come,
yeah,
I think you end up doing more interesting stuff. Yeah,
and particularly if you're writing, the more the more experiences you pick up, that's got to be a bonus, hasn't it, I think? Probably.
So when did you start writing professionally, for what it's worth?
I wrote my first book about 10 years ago, and people who know me know that I'm quite a fan of observational humour,
right,
i.e. like to take the mickey quite a lot and fairly sarcastic. I think that basically
Oh, you get
means...
really well with Paul then.
Okay, so I want to deconstruct this because loads of people say, oh, I want to write a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just a couple of things about that. I don't think people always realise how little money there is in writing books for most authors.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to take you back to that very first book and you deciding to write it. When you decided to write that book, did you have an idea for the book? Did you know what you wanted to write, or did you sit down with a pen and paper one day and went, okay, I'm going to be a writer now. What shall I write about?
Do you know, it's a really weird story. It was kind of like a eureka moment. I'd never thought I would write a book before. Mm. I'd always loved to read, so I was always like a reader. And before I was a teacher, I was a hairdresser. And,
well, you would be, wouldn't you?
Well, obviously, why not? Basically, because my mum was terrible at doing hair and plucking eyebrows and things, so I thought I had to go to beauty college to learn how to do it for myself. So I had a blast, loved it. But then I trained to be a teacher when I was a bit older. So I still sometimes do the hair of friends and families, and I had a couple.
That may be a good thing to do soon.
Well,
if we're going to
another
lockdown.
And I had a couple of ladies that I did that, and my husband would always say to me, you know, whose hair are you doing today? And I'd say, oh, you know, Joan. And he wouldn't know Joan if he fell over. He'd never met Joan. So I used to kind of explain my clients by their attributes. So it might be, you know, Joan, whose husband ran off with, you know, Steve or whatever had happened. And by the way, there isn't a Joan or an
I was just about to go, hold on a minute. We're going to get sued here.
Yeah, I'm being a bit diplomatic. So I basically came up with an attribute for a client, and I said the name and the place and all of the rest of it. And my husband said, oh, my Lord, Karen, that is a brilliant title for a book. And it just sort of came out of nowhere based on a few funny little stories that we'd had. And I said, do you know what? That really is a good title for a book. I'm going to write it. And right. I did. That was it.
So prior to that breakthrough moment, you hadn't really considered writing a book?
No.
Wow. Okay.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had I love poetry. So I'd sometimes written poems for friends' weddings and things like that, just because I did, but no, I'd never really consider it. And so, do you want to know what the title of the first book
is? Yeah, go for it. Yeah,
I'll show you just to prove that I'm not lying. It's called The One-Legged Lady from Balmoral Road. And it isn't really about anyone from Balmoral Road, but it's just more a premise
with less than a full complement of legs. Yeah,
but it's just about this hairdresser, and she goes round to different people's houses, and it's quite remarkable as a hairdresser what people will tell you about their life. It's kind of like being a priest in a way. I think they forget that you're there. They forget that they've just divulged something that you think, you really want to tell me that? So I just sort of collected all these little anecdotes, and the character in the book, she goes around to all these clients and they just tell her all these weird and wacky stories. Some of them are true, some of them are shamelessly embellished, and others are just...
Oh, shamelessly embellished. Yeah. Who would do such a thing?
Who would embellish?
Who would embellish and fabricate and
love a bit of embellishing.
And who would teach an 8-year-old how to do it as well?
Yeah, no one that you'd want to know.
No.
So I want to go through the process. You know, there's two parts to this that fascinate me. There's the process of being a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of that entails in terms of the business side, if you like.
Of course, yeah.
And then there's also the creativity of being a writer. So you had this idea from a book from One-Legged Steve.
Yeah. Who ran off with Joan.
Is he back with you now? No,
that's right. I haven't heard from Steve in ages. Never writes, he never calls.
So you had this breakthrough. You wrote the book. How did you find writing the book? Did it just flow out of you? Or was it a long, drawn-out process? Did you have to work hard at it?
Do you know, it took me... I think I wrote it in about 3 months on a Sunday afternoon when my husband cooked the Sunday lunch, pretty much. I would go up into my study, which was effectively the small back bedroom, and then after about 5 hours, he would bring me a glass of wine and my dinner, and that was how I did it. But I think... when I write, especially if I'm in the zone, it's almost like someone's narrating it to me. It just sort of flows. I don't really know. I did spend a little bit of time before I started writing it, like gathering little anecdotes. And then I ended up with a whole book of little funny stories. And I thought, well, if I just list the anecdotes, that's going to be a pretty dull book.
Yeah.
So I then wove a story around it.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's two types of writers. There's planners and pantsers. Pantsers, they call them, yeah. I learnt this in the writing world.
As you do.
Pantsers, like they say, kind of fly by the seat of their pants, and that's pretty much my approach to life in general.
Yeah.
It just sort of, the story evolves, and sometimes the story that I set out with might take a weird turn, and I think, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen, and yet I'm the one... writing it, so
So coming back to the business side of it, I love the creative side, but I'm also fascinated by the business side, because so many people want to be writers or business books and stuff like that. And we need to, talking about that, we did a competition for a book last week, and we've got to announce the winners this week.
Perfect.
Yeah, but with the business side of it, so you wrote the book, The One-Legged Lady from Balmoral Road. So you've got this book.
A sequel as well.
You've got it written.
A sequel as well.
The tattooed bloke in the flat next door. I
love it. I need to read these books.
So you wrote the book.
Yeah.
You're happy with it. Did you self-publish?
Yeah.
I mean, that has been one of the big breakthroughs over the last 20 or 30 years, isn't it? The ability to self-publish stuff.
If I can be brutally honest, I knew nothing about anything, really. I was able to write books, I discovered, because I gave it a go and I loved it, and I found, actually, I can do this and I really enjoy it. When it came to the business side, I had not a Scooby-Doo. And there's so many pitfalls and so many costly mistakes to be made. And you're quite right. The marketing of a book is a million times harder than writing it. If I could hand that over to somebody else and just write books, I would be pretty happy with that, because it's so difficult. And if you haven't got a name for yourself, if you're not a personality to start with, why should anyone buy... Karen Stanley's book. They don't know who I am.
You haven't got a publishing company spending thousands of pounds promoting it.
It's funny you should say that. I self-published the first one.
Yeah.
Then I had a traditional publishing deal for the second two.
Right.
And I found that... And another writer that I spoke to as well, I don't know if you know someone called Julie Wasmer.
Yes.
She's been great, actually. She's given me a lot of pearls.
Julie's from Whitstable, as you are, and she
writes the Whitstable Pearl Mysteries.
Yeah, she does. But she was also a screenwriter, wasn't she?
For EastEnders, I believe.
For EastEnders,
she's great. She's really supportive. But she made the point, and I, you know, without waffling on, I've made a few costly mistakes over the time.
The only way you learn.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's quite a harsh, quite a steep.
Yes. Learn quickly if it's costly.
Grappling hooks and a bit of Kendall mint cake. But she said to me that even if you get published by the Big Five, which is your HarperCollins and your big, they won't necessarily market you or publicise you. They're not going to spend money on you because you're just sort of a nobody.
Yeah.
So really, they'll put their efforts into the well-knowns and hope that you sort of find your way. So even when I got a traditional publishing deal, I naively thought, woohoo, this is it now. It's all my work is done. And
it wasn't.
No. He did less publicising than I did. So so I've now gone back to self-publishing under a publishing house, which is what they call hybrid. So it's a little bit of both.
Right.
And I found that to be really supportive.
Okay.
And a network of people who are kind of doing the same thing and supporting each other. That's Fabian Books. They've been, and Jo Bartlett, who runs that, she's awesome. She's been amazing and given me more help in 5 minutes than I'd sort of had in 5 years. So she was a real find. But it's a bit of a minefield, and I had no clue what I was doing at all, really.
I guess it's how it works with it when you're any type of business. As you say, you know how to do what you do, but how to make it into a business. I just have to do this quick tweet from Chris Hyde, because it is quite good from Chris. From a hairdressing background, I wonder if Karen's book is full of snippets and clippings.
There are a few snippets and clippings. Well done,
Chris. Boom, Tish.
He's here all week.
That's a fascinating insight into it, because, you know, you're right. People assume, you know, I'm going to make a big time. You know, I'm suddenly going to be J.K. Rowling as soon as I've got a publishing company.
She got 60 rejections, I think, J.K. Rowling, before she was published. It's really loads,
Look at her now.
I know.
But it is so rare. I mean, she's exceptionally rare, because very few people make a billion dollars out of writing.
Yeah, she's quite an exception to the rule, I think, yeah.
Oh, is she not? Is she?
Yeah.
I was about to start writing.
It's interesting what you say, though, that even getting a publisher doesn't necessarily push you that far forward.
Well, and most times you need an agent to get a publisher, and they're harder to get than a publisher.
Sure, right,
exactly.
It's kind of... Okay, so how many books have you published now?
Seven.
Right, okay.
Four adult fiction and three children's books as well.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
And the four adult books you've written, are they all in the same series, you know, Balmoral Road?
We moved on. I've got the One-Legged Lady and then the Tattooed Bloke. They're a kind of sequel of each other.
Yeah.
I've got The Path to True Love, which that was published by my publisher, who said it was deliciously naughty, which was a little bit unnerving, actually. It made me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that
you've been writing soft porn, haven't you, Karen?
My husband was known as the bloke down the pub whose wife writes porn, but that
if
is not
sells,
actually
come
true.
On. All I've got to say is 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, exactly that. And it was actually my daughter-in-law who said, well, you need to chuck a bit of naughtiness in, at which point my son went, oh, my God, my mother and my wife talking about sex, it's gross. So, we moved away from there. And then I wrote Tarts with Darts, which stands alone. That was written after a trip to a social club where we sort of stuck to the carpet for a couple of hours, and I just thought, oh, my God, this is a book in the
I can imagine.
But please do explain Tarts for Darts. What's the...
It's just about a ladies' darts team. I've never played darts in my life, and I know nothing about darts. But we went to this social club. It was... There was a band playing who was shocking. The carpet was so sticky you had to more or less unpin yourself on the way to the loo. There was some bloke in the corner with a bottle of red wine inside his jacket pocket lecturing at all the girls. And I just... I sat there and I said to my husband... This is a book, isn't it? And it's basically writing itself. And he said, well, you could put a darts team in here. And I went, oh, Tarts with Darts. And there we went.
Do you do that now, though? Everywhere you go, you see making it into a story?
I have a notebook all the time. Beware, if you see me get my notebook out. One of my friends said, oh, am I in one of your books? And I said, if you are, it probably means I've taken the mickey at some point. So it's not necessarily a... it's not always a compliment. But,
So you've got to be careful when people go... That sounds like me. And you go, no, it's not you. No,
only the names have been changed. You know, protect the innocent, but.
Chris Hyde again. He's interested. He said he's interested in hearing about self-publicising. He's curious to learn how you actually publicise and sell.
So am I.
That's what she's still working on.
When she's worked it out, Chris, she'll let us know. Yeah.
If Chris has the answers, I mean. I have to say, I was given some great advice recently by the fabulous Zoe Cairns. People buy from people, and that is absolutely true. We all do that, don't we? So it's about, you really have to work hard to build a following of you.
Yeah.
And if people like you and they buy into you and they believe you and they like who you are,
yeah,
then you might sell a few books. And that's why, I suppose, if you... When a book becomes famous overnight, it's usually got a famous name behind it because you've already bought into that person.
Yeah, you bought into
you?
The brand.
Yeah.
No, I do. I'm a manic reader. I'm an idiot reader. I just read.
Yeah, you read so many books.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that though.
And about 18 months ago, I discovered I like historical fiction.
Right.
And I've always been a big fan of Bernard Cornwell, who's a big writer on that kind of stuff, really epic stuff. And I just read all of his work. And I'm sending him messages going, come on, Bern, write another book.
Yeah. It's not quite that easy, Paul.
I'm working on it. I'm with you. Yeah.
A couple of weeks or something.
and I came across another author called Griff Hosker that was writing very similar books. Only this guy knocks them out like nothing. Mm. Yeah. So I bought the first one and then the second one. And then on Amazon, I read them on my phone. So I download them as Kindle books. So I just set up a, you know, whenever he writes one, send it to me kind of thing. And without knowing it, in the last 18 months, I've now read 83 books that he's written. Yeah,
Written 83.
He's written. Yeah. It's amazing.
He's a writing machine.
Exactly. They are all very similar stories.
Yeah.
He's an ex-teacher.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, and he's an ex-history teacher, an English teacher. And the thing I like about his books is the stories are all fairly much the same. It's the historical detail that I like.
Yeah.
And all these 80 books that he's written are set in different time periods.
That's clever, yeah.
But like you say, whenever he produces something, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
And even if I go, I didn't really like that, it doesn't put me off.
But you've bought into him already,
because I've bought into what he does.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. It's about buying into something that you like, you know. And when I've run out of his work, which I currently have at the moment, come on, Griff, get a grip, mate. Get on with it.
Just write another 80, please.
Darts for darts waiting.
Yeah. Amazon, for instance, suggests similar.
Yeah.
Well, I suggested similar, so I bought it, and I just couldn't get into it. It was
really?
You know, it just isn't the same.
No.
So you're absolutely right. So at the moment, you're trying to build a following.
Yeah.
Yeah. People
That's my plan.
Yeah.
My master plan.
Yeah. I just want to talk briefly as well about the kids' books that you've written.
Yeah.
And also, I want to talk about your satirical poetry.
I love a bit of satirical poetry.
And we do have questions piling in on Twitter as well.
Wow.
Do we?
Yes.
For Karen.
Karen, yeah.
Yeah, read them out. Go on.
Okay, well, another one from Chris Hyde. From a personal perspective, how did the first actual sale feel? And how do you feel about critical reviews? Quite deep there, Chris.
Yeah, he's going deep, old Chris. There's nothing like seeing your first book in print. The sense of achievement that you get, and you feel a bit like, oh, it's a little old me, don't you? That's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was a really lovely feeling. Mm. And the first time, particularly when people that you care about, like friends that I, you know, more acquaintances, people that I don't know that well, who sent me a message and said, I really loved it, or I read it on my holiday and it really made me laugh, and, you know, that kind of thing. And other people say, oh, I've bought two of your books and I'm saving them for my holiday. That's just, it's so humbling. It's that feels fabulous. And I'm a bit out there sometimes. I know it's hard to believe. And sometimes I'm a bit... maybe a little bit near the knuckle. And I have written another book that's waiting to be published. I won't say what it is yet, but it's about mental health, but sort of a kind of a half biographical, half sort of almost light-hearted view, if there is such a thing.
Right.
And I sent it to this lady. She said, oh, I'm really interested to read it. And she read it, and there's a few little, you know, cheeky words in there, and it's my kind of take and my sort of sense of humour. And when she reviewed it, bless her, which was really kind of her to do, but I thought, you do not get me at all. If we met at a party, I'm not sure we'd have anything to say, because I missed her by a million miles, and she missed me by a million miles. And you have to know that that's all right, because you won't appeal to everyone.
Absolutely.
You know, and I just thought, well, bless her, it was nice of her, but she thought I was being a bit offensive, but I was just sort of, you know.
But that, again, that's where it comes back to this having a for want of a better word, a fan club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they get you. They get your sense of humour. They get your style of writing. Yeah. They're into your story.
Exactly that.
You can't please everybody.
No.
You just can't, you know, and no matter what, you can't do that because we all have slightly different senses of humour. We all have slightly different views on things. There are some things we're sensitive about and some things that we're not.
Yeah.
So you're always going to get that, aren't you?
Yeah.
What annoys me when I read book reviews are people that are just rude about book reviews.
Yeah. And if you didn't like it, say I didn't like it and move on. That's your prerogative.
It's not my kind of book. Well, why be rude about someone saying that, you know?
Isn't it? You won't love every bit of music, you won't like every food,
exactly.
You won't like every, you know, and that's absolutely... And I do think on that point, you should be true to yourself when you write, because if you try and write to please everybody, it will sound false and it won't, and it just won't work, in my humble opinion.
As you say, those that like you, those don't. That's just life, isn't it?
Exactly. We've all met people who we think, maybe not.
Yeah. And we've got Tracy Ferguson has asked, who are Karen's favourite authors? And she says, don't know why, but I've been reminded of the lovely observations of the Alexander McCall Smith #1 Ladies Detective Agency books.
Oh, wow. All right, okay. Wow. Yeah.
But yeah,
as a child, definitely Enid Blyton.
Right.
And some of my kids' stuff is a bit like that, because I wanted to be one of the famous five. I wanted to write a note in invisible ink and find a smuggler on the beach.
Yeah.
And as a teacher, Roald Dahl, my absolute all-time hero. I mean, I think the man is a genius. I have to say, when it comes to adult books, I'm dreadful at names. So I've read loads of books and that kind of brings it home to yourself. Not everyone's going to remember your name, and it's not because they didn't like you or it's not because they, you know, it didn't resonate. They might, like me, just be a little bit menopausal and slightly forgetful. So you shouldn't take it too personally, perhaps.
Absolutely. But the whole point about a book, it isn't about the author. And what I mean by that, somebody on Twitter recommended a book, and I followed the author, who followed me back and said, I'll be really interested in your views on reading it. I haven't particularly started reading it yet, but I've only read the first couple of pages because I was doing something else. But it's my first instinct with the book was it's about being able to identify with the character, not the author. And when I first started reading it, the only thing I knew was the author. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm in my mind, I'm thinking about the person on Twitter that I met, not the character. And for a book to work, you have to get into the character. You have to buy into the story.
It doesn't really matter who wrote it,
exactly,
in a way, does it?
Exactly. And half the time, you wouldn't even know. If it's a new author to you, you wouldn't know their name because you don't think about that. It's about the character and the content.
And you could read a book by someone very famous and not like it, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always follow.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to bring this segment to an end because we're kind of running out of time.
Okay.
But we can chat later on in the second half of the show about some more of this because it's really interesting. But for the moment, Karen, if people want to find out about your books and the work you do, what's the best way of doing that?
Best way is you can find me on Facebook at Karen Stanley Author, and I also have a website which is www.karenstanley-author.co.uk. Those are probably the two best ways.
Fantastic. There's a link to that website on the Kent Business Radio website. That will stay there forever. So if you want to see that, just go to bizradio.co.uk and it's there on today's show, which number 495. For the moment, Karen, thank you for that. It's brilliant insight into what you're doing. We'll chat later about some of that.
Wonderful.
We've got some other things we want to cover. But while we're talking about books, Amanda, do you want to do the honours with
a big
drum roll?
The announcement.
Yes, please. The big drum roll for the winners of the two books, The 10 Commandments of Business Growth by Dr. Wayne.
Yeah, so your guest last week was Dr. Wayne Wright. Mm. And he gave up two books, The 10 Commandments of Business Growth. And the two lucky winners are Mandy Purdy and Claire Mason.
Your books will arrive in a box.
Yeah. shortly. They're on their way to you.
So thank you to everybody. And there was a big entry for that as well. So thank you to everybody. I'll tell you the process that we did. Everybody that entered, I assigned them a number. And then I texted Jules and said, pick two numbers between 1 and 20.
Perfect.
And she picked two numbers and they were the two winners. So it was all above board.
That's great.
And very random in terms of picking the winners. So congratulations to both of those. Wayne's book is actually out in the first week of October, The 10 Commandments of Business Growth. Do check it out. We got loads of tweets. We've got loads of emails.
And then in the sort of Chris and Tracy kept on getting their questions coming through during the interview. Yeah. I have to read this out. We have had a tweet from Athelbrey. So they're not listening this morning because
they're in Wales.
They're on holiday. So I can't hear you this afternoon. We'll catch up. But saw this as we strolled along Colwyn Bay this morning. So basically, it's a Land Rover in the sea.
Wow.
Under the water.
Okay.
Oh dear.
Somebody
parked on the beach and forgot the tide comes
yep.
in.
Yeah, it's like jet ski survived, Land Rover due out about 10 p.m. However bad your day, someone is having a worse one.
Oh, good grief.
I want to tell you about this. They've tweeted as well, but I've got a full email about it. The lovely Alison Palmer from the Federation of Small Business did tweet me, but its applications are open now for the Kent and Medway Small Business Kickstart Young People's Employment Scheme. The FSB has confirmed it has teamed up with Adecco Working Ventures to help small firms access the government's Kickstart scheme. The FSB urges small employers to apply now to create Kickstart roles from November and tackle the looming rising young people's unemployment. To tackle increasing numbers of young people aged 16 to 24 struggling to find work and on universal credit, the Federation of Small Business has announced a new partnership with Adecco Working Ventures. Together they will form a new national gateway and intermediary partner for the UK government's new Kickstart scheme, which covers England, Scotland and Wales. The FSB will also be delivering a regional programme of webinars and other resources to encourage, inspire and help small businesses to get involved and make the most of the new scheme. Alongside local authorities, business organisations and the voluntary sector, the FSB is also calling for a diversity of intermediary providers at local level. This way, any small business wishing to create one or two roles will have a choice of good quality providers to deliver the important wraparound support services that these young people are going to need. Small firms are ready to step up and contribute jobs for our young people whose livelihoods are now threatened by COVID-19. The UK unemployment rate has risen to its highest level for 2 years, with official figures showing those aged 16 to 24 suffering the biggest drop in employment compared with other age groups. The Kickstart scheme was announced as part of the Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak's plan for jobs in July, with the aim of helping 250,000 16 to 24-year-olds on universal credit into work placement. Small employers in England, Scotland, Wales who are keen to offer a Kickstart role to a young person can now register their interest and find out all about it by going to www.fsb.org.uk/kickstart. That's www.fsb.org.uk/kickstart. Please do find out about that. Do, if you can, offer an opportunity to a young person getting into the world of work. As we've already seen earlier in the show, there are loads of young people around that are entrepreneurial and wishing to do stuff, so do try and help them out.
Got a lot to offer, haven't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. Amanda,
the next meeting of Marsh Network Online is at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, the 30th of September, in the Zoom room. Booking is essential. Book now to reserve your place at book. You replace or what? Booking is essential. Book now to reserve your place at Book Either. Okay, somebody needs to go on a writing course here.
Might have the person to
to book either a free ticket or make a charity donation, and we will send you the link to join near the time. Join us and give and receive support. Grow your contacts, network and this is terrible. Network your business. Why not book through our website, marshnetwork.co.uk, or through the app, Marsh Network app. Sounds fabulous. So if you carry on networking, that's one good thing. A lot of the networking people have been carrying on the networking online on Zoom, so you can still keep in contact with people, with each other, which is really great. So if you want to find out more and maybe teach Terry how to right, probably.
Or maybe you spell check.
Yes. marshnetwork.co.uk.
Sounds good, though.
It's good, good, good. We've had so many tweets coming in. Everyone loved your interview, Karen. I'm wanting to make more questions coming in. You're going to have to go on Twitter afterwards and answer all the questions. There's a bit of a debate going on now about children's authors' books. Jules, obviously, is on Twitter while she's with her mum in the hospital getting involved. But we have had a tweet from Tracy just at the beginning of the show. She's actually just had received, I probably can't find it now, her Part 3 Plucky cards.
Oh, right, OK.
The Plucky World cards. So they're going to be on the website by the end of the day. So that's fabulous. Well done, Tracy. Very proud. She works so hard.
Fantastic. Do you know what?
What?
We're going to join the Channel Radio newsroom.
Is it news time?
Yeah, yep. So.